Accountants, CPAs are the most qualified people in the world, but are they the most productive? Jeremy Clopton, what do you think? Are they super productive, these people?
Some of them are really productive, and some of them not so much, but I think we all know that, don't we? Right, Rob? Right? We all know someone who's really productive. We all know somebody who's really not. But let me position it to you this way. Even those that are the most productive may not always find themselves that way, because that productivity could actually be masking something that's a little bit more challenging underneath the surface.
Well, we're going to go into that, because accountants we hear doing 50, 60, 70 hour weeks, busy season, everything else, they get a lot done. No one's denying that the job is hard, and no one's denying that they've got to make best use of that billable hour or however they want to put that. But are we busy doing the right things? We hear a lot about mental health, resilience, work-life balance, everything else. Just give us a little overview of the landscape here and some of the key issues, Jeremy, when we have this conversation.
Definitely. So I'm going to start it off with work-life balance is broken. Frankly, simply put, I very strongly believe that it is broken. And before anybody jumps on me in the comments, I'm not saying I don't believe in it. I believe that it's broken the way that we approach it. And there's a few reasons for that. First and foremost, it is that we really try to convince ourselves that we will achieve work-life balance by maximizing our calendar and getting the most things done possible. We focus on speed, not necessarily being effective and efficient and a healthy use of our time, if I may introduce a new term that we don't typically want to talk about, right? We want to focus on the business metrics of it, and we get focused on speed, which leads to a little bit of an issue with work-life balance being broken, because it's got to be more than productivity hacks. The second thing is we talk about it like it's a destination, and work-life balance, simply put, is not a destination. It is not even a noun. It is not a place. It is not a thing. It is an action. It is a verb. And therein lies part of the challenge, is we have this mythical finish line that we're chasing toward in trying to achieve work-life balance, when in all actuality, we should be balancing work and life. And that is a big change for a lot of people. The third thing, which I've already violated my own rule on this, but it was for the sake of the conversation, we've got to stop putting work first. We should be balancing life and work. Work is one of our many domains of life. You've got work, you've got family, you've got friends, you've got spirituality, you've got leisure, you've got all these different areas of life. We always prioritize work in the work-life balance discussion. And look, I'm a high achiever. I want to get stuff done. I run a business. I am not discounting at all the importance of work. However, if we all acknowledge that at the end of the day, we are 100% replaceable in our vocation, but we are not replaceable in our individual lives, it shifts the mindset. And
that's very good.
It's so important that we start thinking about things in that healthier manner, because what it does is it gives us grace and it gives us freedom to take care of the things that we need to take care of that may not be work related.
So let's define terms, Jeremy. When we talk about life work or work-life balance, in the Jeremy Clopton Dictionary of Life and Business, what exactly does that mean? So we all understand the same things. Otherwise, you and me would ask 1,000 accountants, CPAs, what work-life balance is, and we get 1,001 different answers.
And there are that many different answers, because my balancing of life and work, Rob, will be completely different than yours.
So there's no definitive answer to what work-life balance is?
There's not a definitive answer. It's in a way, and I realize this is squishy and nobody likes it because it's squishy, it's a bit of a feeling. If you get to the end of the day and you feel like you missed out on something significant that was meaningful, and it felt like you had your priorities wrong as a result, or perhaps that was the cause that led to the effect of you missed out on something significant, it's hard to say you're balancing. I don't care what your calendar looks like. I don't care what the hours to, you know, work hours to life ratio was that day. If you work the wrong 1 hour and you miss the one thing that during that day was most important to you, it's hard to believe that you are going to feel that you were balancing effectively.
That makes sense.
Whereas there have been days I could work 13 hours and I was there for that one moment outside of work that I knew was critically important that I had to be there for, and I can feel completely balanced. Because it's not a numbers game. It's not a math game.
Perhaps.
Right? It's not a calendar game. It truly is. Are you present and taking part in the things that mean the most to you more often than not? And that last caveat is critical.
Perhaps part of the problem, Jeremy, is then that work becomes that most important thing for us. It's where our validation comes from. It's our identity. We spend a third of our day working, a third of our life working. Our whole persona is wrapped up in the job, the role, the responsibilities, the leadership. That's where we get our affirmation, our edification. So do we need to change that, or is that okay?
It can be okay. It can be okay from time to time. You've got to figure out as you go through life, what is so critically important to you is going to change. Right? For folks that have that are empty nesters, for instance, there was a time at which they had young kids at home and that was critically important. And now their kids are not in the home. So they have a different definition of important. There are folks that don't have kids and they have a definition of important. And one of the things that I find is that we so often diminish that because it isn't our definition of what we would balance, right? Somebody wants to go attend a cooking class or go to their football club championship or go attend a concert. And we're like, oh, but that's not important. Yeah, it is. It's important to them. And that's why it's important. And that's why it matters. And there's a managing partner in our profession. His name is John Sensiba. He's the managing partner of Sensiba. And I love how he approaches their commitments at their firm. It is meet your commitments, communicate, and be kind. And it's such a kind of nebulous thing. It sounds like people are like, well, what does that mean? How do you do that? And he's like, it's really not as hard as we're making it. If you meet your commitments, you communicate, and you can, and you're kind about it, you can be balancing life and work because you're getting the things done, and you're getting them done and allowing yourself to also do all of the other things too. And that, in my mind, is what is so important for this. But one of the things that we've got to do, Rob, is we've got to step back for a minute. And as professionals, we have to understand, going back to your original question there, we have to understand why is it that we're finding our identity in our work. So for me, I have workaholic tendencies. I know that. I have always had workaholic tendencies since high school when it was academic work. And I always thought, oh, this is the superpower. One of the, you know, I've always had people tell me, oh, your drive, your ambition, all the things you want to do, that's what makes you great. But at the same time, it's the thing that tears me down. Because I finally started to understand, why do I have those tendencies? And the more stressed out that I get, the more uncertain I am about things, I throw myself into my work because that is where I can escape. Which is a problem when your work creates your stress, by the way. Can we point that out real quick? When your work creates your stress, sure. And your work is then your escape from your stress, it is a very vicious cycle. So I had to understand for me, what is another way to channel that? How else can I escape that versus just working, 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 getting stressed and working? And there's a quote from it's a Peloton instructor, actually, that I heard say it, and it was so spot on. Kendall Tool is the instructor. She said, The only difference between a hero and a villain is how they wield their power. And what I realized is my power, I was becoming my own villain because I was wielding it in a way that was actually detrimental to my performance, to my productivity, to my balancing, to all the things, but I was viewing it as my power. And I was becoming my own villain.
How do we cope then, Jeremy, with an increasingly busy world? A mentor of mine once said, a slower day is not coming. And just the sheer amount of work we have to do, the things on our to-do list, all of these things. We think of our audience, accountants, CPAs. There's more and more things to do, as well as looking after your clients. You've got to adhere to the tax regulations and the complex law changes. You've got to be a leader. You've got to be a manager. You've got to model. You've got to learn communication skills. You've got to learn how to talk on online conference meetings and all these many, many things that they've got to do. And life gets so much busier. So where does the balance come in there?
It's figuring out what are the right things to do. And I'm not going to sit here and say we should do less. I'm not an advocate for we should figure out how just to do less of everything. Because for me to come in and tell a partner, for instance, hey, you just need to work less. You worked 50 hours last week. You need to work less this week. I don't actually have any context by which to say that. Now, do I think that the 70 and the 80 hour work weeks are detrimental? 100% believe that, right? There are some fundamental changes. However, I can't come in and tell you how you're going to most effectively balance. But what I can offer is this. We need to figure out, and you and I were having a conversation recently, and I mentioned this is what I believe to be one of the biggest changes needed and coming in our profession, is we've got to figure out how do we better understand the right things that we should be doing, the right work that we should be doing, the right clients that we should be working for, the right level of work. And instead of just buying into the hustle culture mentality of more is always better, figuring out how do we get more of the right things, less of the wrong things, so that where we're spending our time is always going to be beneficial for what we're looking to achieve.
So you're talking about triaging there, some kind of prioritizing?
It's all about priority. And we think that we have these to-do lists, and therefore we have priorities. And when I ask somebody, do you know what your priorities are? Like, yeah, I've got all 50 of them written out. That's not the definition of priority, right? Priority is one. So do you have a list that says, here's what is the most important thing? And I'm an advocate for doing that on a daily basis. You need to know, what are your three most important things? Four more most important things. I bought into three for years now. I have a mild fascination with prime numbers. I'm a bit of a nerd, Rob. I know that's shocking.
I know you have the occasional geek out, Jeremy.
I do. So, for a long time, I called it my prime three. Now I use the full focus planner system, and it focuses on the power of three. However you want to look at it, you've got to know what are the things that you have to get done today for today to be successful. And I would advocate not all of them always need to be work related. So I push for professionals to always have what is your near non-negotiable in life. And that changes by the month, by the quarter, by the season, literal seasons, could be whatever. So for me, right now, I've got three young kids. We're getting ready to go into softball season once we come back from spring break, and I coach and help coach my daughter's softball team. So for me, my near non-negotiable is I want to be at as many practices and games as possible over the course of that entire season. Do I believe that I will be at every single one of them? Absolutely not, because my travel season starts May 1st. Their first game is April 30th. It's probably not going to be perfect. But what I do is I'm very...
Hence that phrase, near non, so you're giving yourself a little bit of wriggle room.
Exactly. And yeah, That's what's so important is we talk about it like it's all or nothing. And it isn't, because if I know that I'm doing everything I can to try to structure that season to where I'm achieving my business outcomes that I want to achieve, and I'm achieving my life outcomes that I want to achieve, neither is probably going to be perfect. Could I have done more in both? Sure, probably. We could always do more. So the question is, am I doing the things that I need to do to meet my definition of success? And if the answer is yes, we have to give ourselves the freedom to step back and say, could I have done more? Yes, but that wasn't my definition of success. I achieved what I wanted to achieve.
How does perfectionism play into this, Jeremy? We're dealing with, you talk to accountants and leaders all the time. There's this quest for excellence and this binary. It's right, it's wrong. It's got to be absolutely perfect. We are in the game of mitigating and anticipating risks. So everything's got to be perfect. But that's exhausting, isn't it?
It's exhausting.
It doesn't fit in with a work-life balance
approach. Yeah, it's also contradictory. Because you said we're mitigating risk, and you said it has to be perfect. But we all know you can't perfectly mitigate risk. There will always be risk.
True.
Excellence and perfectionism are not the same thing. Excellence is, have you met your standards for quality? With the understanding, there will always be risk that you can't fully mitigate. But have you met the standards? Mm-hmm. Yes. Again, could we spend 10 more hours reviewing a tax return to ensure that we got it down to the penny? I guess we could. We still wouldn't mitigate all of the risk. Perfectionism, look, recovering perfectionist. I remember asking my very first audit in charge, and I will never forget the look on her face when I asked this question. I said, what do I do if cash doesn't balance? Because you know they give the new guy the really hard stuff, right? I had cash on an easy client. She goes, what do you mean didn't balance? I said, it's out of balance. What do I do? She goes, well, how far is it off? I said, it's off 3 cents. And the look on her face was just like, how did you get a degree? Like, really? That's the question you're going to ask me week one on an audit is it's off 3 cents? But it's that perfectionistic. It's like, we would never expect perfection in that, right? We have materiality. Excellence has materiality. We can't get to perfect because perfection, especially in professional services, it doesn't exist. And we've got to figure out what are we willing to accept as excellence.
You'd think we'd be a lot better these days, Jeremy, with all the productivity hacks and do this better and do this faster and all the tools, automation we have at our disposal. Does that help?
It can. But as you said, we're using it to go faster. We're not using it to increase our efficiencies in what we have. We're using it to go faster, to do more in the same amount of time. So we're never actually getting time back.
Yeah, to get more done.
Right? Yeah. And that was the whole premise behind technology when it was started to be introduced and processes and everything into the workforce. And I can't remember the book that I was reading when they were talking about this. Right? We were supposed to get down to like a much shorter work week when automation and technology was introduced into the whole concept of work life. And we never did, because what we realized very quickly is we can actually do a whole lot more in the exact same amount of time. And more has got to be better. It's that hustle mentality again. Mm-hmm. Alexis Ohanian called it hustle porn, right? The addiction to more, 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 more. And that's the only way to get ahead. Michael Hyatt calls it the hustle fallacy. We buy into the idea that the only way to get ahead is to do more. At the end of the day, we've got to start to redefine success. And success does not always mean more. And Rob, if I can be so bold, success doesn't mean more from a business standpoint. If you get $3 million more top line and you don't get any of it to the bottom line because it was junk revenue and you didn't actually get more profitability out of it, are you really willing to do that much more work for no more? Right? We can't just look at the top line. We've got to figure out, and I mean, let me ask you, would you be okay being more profitable, spending less time in the business? Would you be okay with that? Right? We know it's okay, but we can't convince ourselves that it's okay.
Yeah. There's another play in this too. If I said to you, I could give you an extra 5 hours in your day every day, what would you do with it?
Yeah. And most
very few people get past, oh, I'd get so much more work.
Exactly.
Done.
That's exactly what people would do, is they say, great, I'd have 5 more hours to do more work. But the question is that the right use for it? And let me give this answer, because somebody's going to push back and say, yes, that is the right use for it. There is a case for that. I will not discount that. I am not going to try to tell someone what their priorities in life should be. There is a point in my career when I wasn't dating. I wasn't married. I didn't have kids. It was just me. I didn't have, I ran as a hobby. I can run anywhere in the world. And I said, I want to work. I want to travel. I want to do everything. Now, I wish I would have learned to set boundaries during that time so that I wouldn't have fallen into the habits that I did. However, for me to sit here on a podcast and try to tell someone what their priorities should be, it is completely contradictory to the message that I believe to be so true. And that is, everyone has their definition of success. The one thing that I will say to partners of accounting firms and any professional services firm is this: you've got to model what it looks like to be a partner in a way that gets other people to want to be a partner. And if you model a life,
they set the tone, that's right, the culture, Jeremy.
And if you model a life that nobody else wants, and then you can't figure out why people don't want to be a partner, that's problematic. But if you model it, and look, I don't know a lot of partners that don't take their vacations, right? They take great vacations, then they hide it and they don't talk about it, and they make it seem like they were working the whole time. Let's just be a little bit more open with people. How did you enjoy life? And one other thing, if I may, please don't, when somebody young in their career says, man, I'm going to miss my kids, basketball game, or I'm going to miss this really important thing. So, well, I never missed anything going through my career. Because the only thing they're going to hear is, I'm a partner and I can do what I want. And that's not what you're trying to communicate. And that's not what you need them to hear. Just be honest with them. Say, you know what? Looking back, I don't feel like I ever missed anything meaningful. I'm sure I missed something, but here's what I did to ensure that I was balancing my life and my work to where I felt successful. Stop hiding behind the veneer of a perfect life and of perfection, and let your people know how you did it. And that's going to be so much more valuable.
This is great, Jim. I want to finish on a really practical note of people that are hearing this message. It's really resonating with them. They know they need perhaps a recalibration of their priorities. They might have some responsibilities demanding clients' expectations of their role, but they need to start pushing back. What practical advice would you give them? Maybe two or three top tips for them to get a handle on their work-life balance or realign their life-work priorities, perhaps even in leadership roles, in accounting and finance roles.
First thing is, you've got to figure out what's your definition of success. Nobody else is ever going to be able to define that for you. And if you let somebody else define your definition of success, you will never find it, because it'll never feel authentic. So first and foremost, figure out what's most important to you. Define those near non-negotiables. All right, pick one in life that you've got. Maybe it's two. You don't want a bunch of, I don't want, 15 different things that I've got to do. Let's start small. You may get to that at some point, but start small. What's a near non-negotiable that you've got to prioritize to be successful? And then the third thing, and this is the thing that for a lot of folks, especially leaders, and when I heard it the first time, is a punch to the gut, but I'm going to offer it anyway. You've got to ask yourself two questions. The very first question is this: what are you doing to contribute to the current situation? You've got to own what you're doing that is leading to the outcome that you're getting. And what it is you're probably the first to sabotage your own boundaries. Maybe not, but that's your first question. The second question is, what am I willing to do differently to improve it? If you can answer those two questions, follow those other two steps, you will be well on your way to making progress in this area.
Jeremy Clopton, simple, but so profound. Thank you so much for your time and your insights today.
Thanks, Rob. It was a blast.